Hi, everybody. A couple of remarks before I want to get started. One is there's no shame in going back and coming in. One of the things I'd like you to consider is that there is something missing, and it's not that you're bad or weak or not good enough. So embrace the idea that you have the courage to stand up again and try. I think this is so phenomenal. But friends, what these steps are going to point to for us is that we don't have to live constantly battling alcohol. Step one is the only time that we talk about alcohol, oddly enough. And what we have to come to terms with is admitting that we are powerless over alcohol. Now, that may sound on the surface a simple idea, but in experience, what happens if we haven't fully admitted this, we engage in internal conversation about drinking. And the battle becomes more difficult because we're not certain that we are defensive against the first drink. We're defenseless against the first drink, rather. So if you're struggling, wonderful. Acknowledge the fact that you're struggling. And what is it going to take for you to finally admit that you are defenseless? That in fact, you don't have the power to control or manage your alcohol. It's just a thought. So here we are in step one. We kind of admitted we're powerless over alcohol. Our lives have become unmanageable. And the question comes up about power. What Alcoholics Anonymous does is a 180 degrees turn. Because one might think that we would try to engage in power, that we try to get power, try to create power through our effort, through our knowledge, through our cognitive ability, through our works, only to find that there's something deeper going on, that we don't have the degree of power that's necessary for transformation. And that brings us to step two, where we come to believe in something other than ourselves. If I have limited power through my self-will and it doesn't work for me, particularly in the area of alcohol and my unmanageability of my life, I need to find something to plug into that's going to restore me to wholeness. Wilson calls it a higher power. Now, isn't it interesting that Wilson's view is about powerlessness and power? And what step two brings us to a place where we can create or begin to believe in a power so great that will help us move into sobriety a day at a time. I also want to point out, if in fact we're not admitting that we're powerless or we refuse to believe in something, it's going to have consequences down the line. And this is what we call dry drunks, where people who have sobered up but don't appear to be happy. They're still with all or nothing thinking and controlling. You've seen the people around those rooms. They're not whole at any point in their sobriety. What we're doing here with the 12 steps is just the opposite of that. We're saying we don't have the power to do it. We're creating a belief system that's going to give us the power to accomplish a life of freedom. And because we're doing that, we then can have joy and peace, purpose and mission in our life. So, friends, step three is a very, very important step, as they all are. So let's begin. Dr. Silkworth was the man that helped Bill Wilson understand what he was dealing with. And he gave us three words. He said we were restless. Irritable and discontent. So you can imagine for a moment returning to that place, and maybe you're already there. How difficult it is to remain sober because what you're looking for is some relief. Nothing seems right. And we express this in many different ways. We express it by saying, I don't feel good in my own skin. I was never really okay with other people. I'm a bit of an oddity. We say it many, many different ways. Nothing is ever good enough. And I'm discontented. Now, I've sat in meetings for 54 years. And I've heard these words used as shorthand for the drinking problem, the addiction, the allergy. And that's not wrong, but it's not complete. Because when I look at those three words, I mean, really look at them, I see something underneath, something running the whole operation. Like an engine, no one ever showed us. We were restless, irritable, and discontent. That, my friends, is not a drinking problem. That is a power problem. We were restless because the world wasn't going according to our plan. We were irritable because people around us kept refusing to behave the way you needed them to. And we were discontent because life, the whole arrangement, kept failing to match the script you wrote in your head. You were trying to run something that you were never built to run. Now, here's something that took me years to understand. And when I finally saw it, everything clicked. The first three steps are not a checklist. They're not a pass-fail. They operate on principle or of degrees. The amount of freedom you receive in step three is directly proportional to two things: how powerlessness you actually admit to in step one, and how much you actually believe in step two. Not more, not less. Exactly that amount. It's like plumbing. The pipe only carries what the opening allows. You can stand at step three and say the prayer and mean it, genuinely mean it. But if the pipe behind you is narrow, that's what flows through. So let's say in step one, you admitted you were powerless over alcohol. Good, true. But did you admit that you were powerless over your thinking? Over your fear, over your need to control, over your resentments. Because the admission determines the opening, and the opening determines the flow. And in step two, did you come to believe that a power, higher power, could restore you to sanity around your drinking? Or did you come to believe that this power could restore you to sanity in all things? in your marriage, in your finances, in your health, your career. The scope of your belief sets the scope of your freedom. And here is what I wish everyone had told me, or someone told me. You don't do these steps once. You keep going back. You admit to more powerlessness. You expand your belief into a new territory. And the pipe gets wider. So that by the time you arrive at step three, I mean, really arrive, you don't just decide to turn your will and your life over to God. You want to. It becomes the only thing that makes sense. There's a relationship between input and output. And what you put in is what you'll get out. The depth of surrender you're capable of step three is built by the work you did in steps one and two. So if you're stuck, if you feel like you've done step three, but the freedom hasn't come, don't look forward, look back. Where is the pipe stair narrow? Have you not yet admitted? Do you not yet believe? That's not failure. That's the work. That's how it's designed. Here's what I love about the steps. They don't just describe the problem, they move you. Step by step, they shift you from the center of the universe towards something else entirely. Step one says, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. Notice what's already happening. The question of power is on the table. Powerless, limited power, unmanageable. If I cannot manage my own life, then who or what can? Step two says, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. There it is, something other. Step two doesn't ask you to surrender to it yet. It only asks you but to believe it exists. That's the first move. From the failing center toward the possibility that something else out there. And then step three. I made a decision. Four words. Let me tell you something about that word, decide, because this is where it gets interesting. The word decide belongs to a family of words, the family of CIDE words. Here's a list of them: homicide, suicide, pesticide, genocide. What do all these words share? To cut, to sever, to eliminate an alternative. That's the insight. So when we decide, you are not drifting passively toward a choice. You are making a severance. You are saying, this path, this other path, I am closing the door on it. And the path, step three, you ask you to close the door on it, is this one: the path of doing it alone. A path of being the sole operator of your own life. The path of managing, controlling, scheming, and white knuckling your way through everything. That's the cut. Not to believe harder, not to pray more sincerely, but to sever the illusion that we were ever equipped to run this show by ourselves. Let me tell you about my version of that
Love
decision,
that.
because it wasn't what I thought it would be. When I came to these rooms, what happened was, I call it a baptism of fire. The crisis arrived at my door uninvited, and it wasn't leaving. I reluctantly gave up control a little. I put down the bottle. And here's what I didn't put down: my thoughts. I still trusted my thoughts completely. My cognitive ability was still mine, still reliable, still the thing I leaned on. My biases, which I didn't know yet know that there were biases in my thinking. My emotions, which were quietly steering nearly every decision I made, while I told myself I was being rational. I surrendered the substance and I kept the wheel. So, what does a life look like when you put down the drink, but you're still running the show? I'll tell you. I was worried. I was concerned. I felt limited. I felt not good enough. A persistent low-grade sense that something was wrong. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And this existed when I was sober. That's the thing they don't tell you in the brochure. You can be completely, genuinely sober and still be living the same interior weather as before. Because sobriety is not the same thing as surrender. And I had confused the two for years. What I discovered, maybe years later, honestly, was that I had never done the due diligence of step three. I had circled it, nodded at it, said the prayer once or twice, but I had not actually made the decision. I had not made the cut. The door was still open. Self-will, God's will, willingness. And it can be feel very abstract. Theology at a distance. But here's how I've come to understand it, and it changed everything for me. What is will? Will is cause. That's it. Will is the thing that causes your life. Self-will means I am the cause. I am the origin. I am the engine. Everything runs through me, from me, because of me. And step three asks a different question. It asks, am I willing to have God cause me to be restored. Am I willing to try harder? Am I willing to be better? But I am willing to step out of the seat of causation and let something else drive. Because here, what becomes mute when you actually do that? Here's what gets taken off the table. Effort, competence, courage, persistence, controlling, managing, all of it becomes mute. Not wrong, not bad, but no longer the engine. Because I am being cared for. And if I actually believe I am being cared for, then what do I need to be is being provided. You see the counterintuitiveness of this? The harder I try, I end up making things worse. So, to turn my will and my life over the care of God requires some trust. And I want to be able to provide that with you, that I can no longer do it on my own, so I have to create some other, a belief in a higher power that is going to advocate for me. And to decide, it means to cut and sever, doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to won't take my will back. I will, but I take it back every day. But when I know I'm doing it, I then turn it back to where it belongs, and that is with God. So I got a few more things to talk about. I guess I'm not going to be able to get through all of this, unfortunately. So friends, this is the gateway to freedom. This is the gateway to freedom. And at the end of the meeting, I'm going to share with you what I'd like you to do for the next upcoming week to help support you in step three. So what I was introducing is this idea that the idea of one's will versus the will of a creator and being in the care of this creator, this higher power. So if you I get where, a lot of people struggle with God. And as we all know, you don't have to believe in God at all. But we have to learn to believe in something other than us. Why? Because we fail at life. We have learned helplessness. We've tried to just stop drinking many times before we actually find sobriety. We make bad decisions over and over and over again. Sometimes we live in fear. So our ability on its own isn't significant enough for us to achieve a life of wholeness. So I just keep bringing back to this idea that this is a practical approach. So I have a particular belief, but that's my belief. I don't try to persuade anybody with it, nor do I dissuade anybody about their belief. If one is experiencing happiness and wholeness, then let them be where they're being, even though it might sound different than what you're experiencing. That's the richness of our conversations, that we're not all the same. And that we all have valuable experiences around spiritual matters, which is fantastic. So what I was leading up to, I'm not too sure where I stopped, but what I was trying to lead up to was this idea, how do I know when I'm in God's will or I'm in my self-will? And I wanted to give some indicators not absolutes, but indicators of what that may look like. So, if we're talking about effort, I gotta do this, I must do this, I should do this, these are egocentric things that we say. So, we're looking to do more effort. We're questioning our competence, our courage, our persistence, our controlling, the ability to manage. All of it now becomes mute. Not wrong, not bad, but mute. Because this isn't about that. This is about allowing. Sometimes we overthink things and we try to overwork things. And what we're doing is we're standing in our own way. What's really required here is that we surrender. See how passive that is? Nothing more to learn. There's nothing more to do. There's just allowing a spirit to come within us that will guide and help direct us. So we're no longer the engine. I actually believe I'm being cared for at this moment. And then I need is being provided. See, I don't have to do anything. This is the gateway. Another side of the gateway is a word that we barely dare to use. Freedom. That's the payoff. That's what exists on the other side of step three. Now, here's one thing about the ego. It doesn't announce its return. It doesn't say things like, here, I'm the ego and I'm coming back into your life so that you'll take back control. It doesn't say that. It kind of slips through the side door, if you like. And before you know it, you're running on self-will again and wondering why you feel off. So how do you know? How do you know when you quietly close the door on God and reopen the one you decided to close? Listen to your language. The ego's vocabulary says these like symptoms. Listen for these words. I should. I need. I want. Listen for the feeling of not being good enough, of being afraid, of needing more than what's here. And now listen to the other language, the language of living on the other side of the cut. Provided, gifted, changed, transformed. Those are not words you generate. Those are words that arrive. They are given. Self-will produces. God's will provides. Self-will accumulates. God's will transforms. The old patterns keep coming back. And I've been at this for 54 years, and I can tell you they still come. The voice says, grab on. I can do this. I can control this. Don't trust anything you can't see. That voice doesn't retire. You just learn to hear it differently as information, not instructions. So the ancient truth is this. Wilson used the word for what step three is pointing toward. He called it power. Not religion, not doctrine. Not the God of any particular building or tradition. A force in this universe, power, that is divine in every human being. Not in some human beings. Not the spiritual ones. Not the ones sober long enough. every human being, including you, sitting in that seat, wondering if this applies to you. I'm not asking you to believe what I believe. I'm not asking you to use my language or my framework. What I'm asking, what I'm inviting you to do is this. Get honest about what you actually trust, not what you think you should trust. Not the higher power that feels required of you, the one you can even barely actually turn toward. Because that's the door, that's the cut, that's the decision. And when it landed for me, really landed, it didn't feel like a lightning bolt. It didn't feel like a spiritual experience I could describe to you. It felt like an ancient truth, like something I had known somewhere underneath the noise, like I have been away from home for a long time. And something in the room said, "You belong here. You are not alone. There is an advocate. There is a partner. There is a power whose only purpose, whose entire orientation is to support you, provide for you, and give you what you need." And that's the end of the talk. Blessings to you all.